Hello, listeners. Matt George here. This September, we're launching a new podcast. In collaboration with Sensory Friendly Solutions, New Brunswick Community College, and Taking It Global, we're diving deep into the world of neurodiversity. We'll be talking to innovators, parents, and industry leaders about our noisy, bright, and overwhelming world to discover sensory-friendly living. The Sensory Friendly Solutions podcast is coming to you this September on the Unsettled Media Podcast Network. Hello, listeners. I'm back from gallivanting around the Atlantic bubble from Halifax over to Newfoundland and now back in the studio in New Brunswick. This is another episode of the Growing Pains podcast. It's the only podcast dedicated exclusively to economic development in Atlantic Canada. I'm Matt George.
And I'm David Campbell.
David, where are you coming to us from this morning? You've braved the wilderness that is outside the Atlantic bubble.
Yes, I'm on the banks of the St. Lawrence River in Kingston, taking a little short vacation, driving my daughter back to university in London, Ontario. And so we decided to do this, even though we know it's going to require 2 weeks of self-isolation when we return next week.
You sent me a picture of you and your family on a boat yesterday. You texted me. Where were you when you were on that boat?
We were on a cruise in the river here, where you go around the Thousand Islands. And it's absolutely fantastic. If you've never done that, you need to see it. There's a tremendous amount of rich, sort of wealthy homes, but there's also national parks. Parks Canada runs a bunch of those islands. It's really a sight to behold.
Very good. Okay, we're going to crack right into it today. We got some cool stuff coming. We have a conversation this morning on IT, something extremely close to my heart, and I know you think about it a lot too, Dave. But we also have an election special coming up. We don't usually talk politics on this show, but with a lens of economic development and focus, we're going to do a bit of stuff on the election with some of the CEOs of the regional chambers of commerce. But first, we have a guest. She's not new to this show, and she will not be new to the majority of our listeners, but it's Kathy Simpson, the CEO of Tech Impact. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning to you both.
Kathy, we introduce people by title on this show, but 2020 has been such a monumental shit show that the way that you describe your work and what you do, the lens may have changed. It may not have changed, but the lens may have changed. Can you describe what you're doing right now as you are in your current iteration in 2020? What are you focusing on? What are you thinking about?
Well, I like to try and get shit done. And there's been a lot to do since COVID has hit, particularly. But my focus is absolutely trying to understand the role that the digital economy can play as we look at what is happening because of COVID. But, you know, what does our economy need to be able to recover and get on track? So everything that I do, whether it be the lens of how do we work as Tech Impact, as the organization, or how I work in my volunteer time and in my own work that I do with girls and young women, it's all about the tech industry. That's what I do. That's my focus.
Mm-hmm. And you're with Tech Impact now, but you've had a storied history in the region in IT leadership before that. What was your time in the private sector like? Trace that career arc for us a little bit.
Yeah, it's not that complex. I came here in 1990, so 30 years that I've been in New Brunswick. Atlantic Canadian girl, that's for sure. Born in Newfoundland, raised in Nova Scotia. Got my business degree at Acadia, came because of MBTEL. Thought I'd stay 2 years. And 30 years later, and three children, and happily married, life is great. So very fortunate. I spent 13 years at MBTEL, and it was quite a draw. And it was, you know, when I think back at it now, it really was a magical place to learn as a new graduate. I was in the management trainee program. They were hiring like 25 to 30 new university and college grads at the time. So you had this group right from the very beginning. My first job was awful. I was an internal auditor, but I learned a lot about the organization, and it provided an opportunity for me to learn from the roots up, spent a lot of time in customer service, and then kind of reached time in marketing, which really opened my eyes up to what I've spent most of my career doing. So marketing, product management, was involved in launching the first IPTV service here in New Brunswick. We were about a decade ahead of our time, but then got to help try and sell that in various places around the world. So, you know, I wouldn't have understood that time in my career to be really working with some startups within the telco environment and what the telco was trying to create then, because we had phenomenal leaders like the late Jack Travis, Jerry Pond, Peter Jollymore, Curtis Howe, and so many others that really paved the way for us young folks who were learning what it was all about. And then lots of changes happened there. So I joined a company called T4G Limited, and T4G was just starting to grow here in Atlantic Canada, and got to do a variety of roles. Ended up being a vice president in that company. So had many responsibilities from leading teams who were doing IT work and consulting work to being the vice president of marketing and the vice president of public sector and finally people and culture. But it was an amazing organization that really tried to put the topic about data analytics on the map here in Atlantic Canada. We launched the Big Data Congress that really started this conversation about data, and what we were trying to do at that point in time is help people see how that was going to be such a part of the tech community, and had a wonderful career there for 15 years. But then I wanted to try something new. I really did want to stay as part of the tech industry, but I wanted to do something in a new capacity and role. And so the CEO role of Tech Impact came up. I was able to leave T4G, continue to work with them as an organization because they're members mm-hmm. of Tech Impact. And it's been an incredible 2 years getting to really understand more about the industry and what our challenges are, what our opportunities are, and what do we need to do to really drive technology here for our economy.
Kathy, so can you tell us who Tech Impact is? Like who are the members and what do you do?
Yes. So Tech Impact is an industry organization, private sector. Members include some of the biggest users of IT in the Atlantic region. So companies like McCain's, Atlantic Lotto, JD Irving, Emira, for example. We have all the large telcos, so Bell, Telus, and Rogers. And we have global IT firms like Cisco and Siemens, as pointing out a couple. And then we have regional IT firms like Innovatia and Mariner and T4G, which has just been recently acquired by MNP, and others. That's not the complete exhaustive list. But we also have two universities, Dal and UMB, and we want to be really tightly integrated with them. So when we think about what we want to do, we're focused on three things, the pillars of what we believe growth means for the industry. One, people, and having human resources and the talent to be able to do the work here. Innovation and investment. How do we get more investments happening in the sector, whether that be public or private sector investing? And three, how do we grow? What is the magic that's going to enable this industry to grow? And if this industry grows, they contribute more to the overall economy. So I might be, you know, part of a group like the team we had together to do Turning Points. We've done tech series called Tech Talks, which will be starting again in the fall, but in a digital format. And most recently, we've launched the Digital Boost program. So it's really about trying to find ways that this sector can grow. And it started, Tech Impact started 10 years ago because these older gentlemen who are the CEOs of a lot of these firms said, we're not living up to our potential as an industry. And we need to bring more light to the industry. We're still not a generation old. You know, there's not a lot of tech firms in Atlantic Canada more than 15 years old. So for us, we think of ourselves often as we're still in our infancy stage. We'd love to be, you know, excelling even more. So anything that I can get involved in with our members to help them grow, help them find resources and put more investment in the region, that's where I put my hat and spend my time.
Why does every, this is for both of you, and we're going to unpack all of that, but I want to stay with the origin story because the origin story tells us so much. Why does every good technology story in this region start with NBTEL? The people that I've met because of our age difference, the people that I've met that are in your generation that are at the helm of some of these new organizations, it seems to me there's always an origin story that goes back somewhere to NBTEL. And whether it's the culture of the organization or what it meant to the region, it spawned this army of the next generation of leaders of these companies. It seems like that keeps coming up time and time and again, and it seems to be not untold, but probably an undersold story.
Yeah, I got goosebumps as you were saying that, Matt. I think for me, when I came, I never imagined I would stay in St. John, and St. John is my home, and I love it here, and I've had a wonderful life here. Back in 1990, when I joined the organization, they believed in young talent. And they put us in roles that we never should have been in. Like, they really had this fantastic mentorship system. They believed in what they were doing as an organization, but then they believed in the people and their capabilities. And we just found ourselves in these wonderful situations where, you know, we're launching these incredible services. The digital network was ahead of its time versus across the country. And they really did take a risk on young talent and develop them fully. So there was really some incredible leaders that enabled us to grow, and we had a great time.
I've always thought about this issue of the catalyst, right? So if you look at Nortel and how it led to this cluster of IT in Kanata and around Ottawa. And in fact, it never really recovered. If you look at the tech sector in Ottawa, it really never recovered the loss of Nortel. If you look at BlackBerry in Waterloo and how so many of the other companies spun out of BlackBerry, and if you look at NASA in the U.S., and if you look at DARPA and all these other sort of core entities, you can see that they created or spawned this whole cluster of firms. And I think NBTEL played that role here in New Brunswick. So for economic development purposes, the question is, where's the next, you know, the next NBTEL? We've thought about NB Power. Really, there's not the right environment, I think, for the NB Power to have that same effect, possibly, but really we haven't seen it. And I don't know. People have talked about government playing that role in terms of its IT spend or in terms of its investments in research. So I don't know in New Brunswick what that next big catalyst is, but certainly NBTEL really played that role. And Kathy and I probably bumped into each other in the halls because I was down there for 1 year in the early 90s as well.
But Matt, one of my jobs was to do tours of the living lab, and the team recreated a living room that was able to showcase how we were going to have TV on the PC. Can you imagine? And then we were going to have TV over the IP network. And we would have hundreds of visitors. It would be technology firms, it would be telcos, and they were from around the world. And, you know, back then I wouldn't have understood the magnitude of how far ahead we were as an organization, but I certainly didn't understand how special it was to have leaders with the thought process and the foresight to think about what technology can do and how to make money by using technology, obviously. You know, you look back, at one point I was the portfolio manager for the feature creatures. So call waiting, call answer, call display. But we were leading, you know, the country in the penetration of these services and the revenue that came from it. It was all really a magical time. But getting to do these tours, getting to understand what other telcos were doing, what other technology firms were doing, Nortel was in the middle of so much of this for a very long time. It really got us grounded as individuals and enabled us to do other things in the local community, which was, you know, was really cool. People like Dave Grebentz, who's, you know, the co-CEO of Innovatia, and the list goes on and on. They've done amazing things outside of the telco world that they spent, you know, their formative years learning from so many great leaders.
Yeah, there's two things and maybe three that when I think about NBTEL and the people that I've spoken to who were there in the early days that are undersold. Maybe it's just my generation that wasn't paying attention, but maybe just undersold in general, because we do undersell in this region chronically. One is, am I right in saying it goes beyond national borders? Because I talk to people like a mentor of mine, and I know he's a mentor to every student at UNB now, is Dan Dwaron. And he talks about going to Colombia to set up infrastructure. He talks about acquiring businesses in Maine. Am I right in saying that this story is actually bigger mm-hmm. than people think it is? That's international leadership. That's not national leadership.
That's right. It absolutely is. Dan moved to Maine for a couple of years to start an internet startup company called Prexar.
That's right. Yeah. And that was that brings me to my second point, is we talked to Jeff White and Durendra about entrepreneurship, not just exclusively in the tech sector, but obviously now you default to the tech sector when you're talking about entrepreneurship. But they said the intrapreneurial mindset at NBTEL as well. And I think that piggybacks on the mentorship platform that they had. But the intrapreneurial mindset at NBTEL, go and start businesses, go and acquire businesses. Let's not necessarily divide and conquer, but let's build a big enterprise here. That seems to be something that's incredibly underrated in a big company.
Yeah. We didn't realize probably at the time that we were all these spin outs were startups. You know, we called them, they were subsidiaries, and, you know, they were projects that eventually became, you know, pretty important regional organizations and a lot of good learning.
So people say I'm a little hard on NB Power because I've said I'd like to see the same thing happen there, only around smart grid and other kinds of really innovative kinds of energy solutions. But the difference is the regulated environment. So NB Power sits inside a regulated environment. They can't spend a nickel without the regulator, whereas NBTEL was able to take little kitties of money and say, Kathy, go do this, or Dan, go do this, or, you know, Marcel LeBron, go do this. And you can't really do that right now in NB Power. So I'm a little sympathetic there, so I don't want to be perceived as picking on NB Power. But as we look at smart grid and renewable energy and the whole energy transformation, it would be kind of cool to think about how you could use NB Power as a catalyst for an NBTEL-like boost of creativity and innovation in New Brunswick. But I don't think in the regulated environment you're able to do that.
What do you think is the best? This makes me think, and I know we'll move on from this, but this is one of my big obsessions. What do you think is the best? I'm going to ask this question in a weird way, but what do you think is the optimal environment for entrepreneurship and building things within an organization? Because there are extremely successful companies who we all know the name of, who I actually went to work for just out of university as an analyst in the IT division, where you couldn't even have pictures of your family up on the wall. There was such a corporate culture that, and I'm not saying it's bad, I don't know which one's better, but you had to toe the party line at all times. That business is still, as we know, incredibly big. But then you get in organizations where you're nimble, you're fast, you're moving, shorts and t-shirt, because it doesn't matter what you wear, you're just building things. That's kind of the new wave, and that's kind of the company that I'm building here. But I wonder what's better. I mean, the old school and the new school coming together. There's a bit of both. Maybe that's how you get out of your own ways. You combine the two and there's a little bit of both.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong in that thinking. You need cash. There needs to be capital that you can invest with the mindset of it's likely going to fail. If you're not willing to put money into a risky situation and let good people potentially fail at creating that idea, then you're not going to have an environment of entrepreneurship. And sometimes it's hard to have all of the right conditions, but I do think cash, I think mentorship, I think a mindset of great reward, but also a mindset of be ready for lots of challenges when things don't go wrong, but continue to be able to invest going forward.
Yeah, I think Kathy's absolutely right. I mean, if you look at NBTEL, it made the vast amount of its revenue came from good old-fashioned telecommunications, right? Absolutely. Telephones and telephone services. And then they were able to use some of that revenue to embark on these very innovative ventures. But it's the same today. If you look at Google, it makes 95% of its revenue on these ads, but it can take billions of dollars and pump it into really funky kinds of things that can go under, right? And do go under. At one point, Google was one of the biggest investors in aquaculture. And I don't think anybody knows that, but they actually were scouting around New Brunswick, trying to do deep water aquaculture here. And then their new CEO got rid of a lot of those sort of tangential investment projects. But that's it. Kathy's right. You need enough cash that you can carve off to invest and be prepared to lose some of that money. And then you need the right culture, the right leadership to make it happen.
And Kathy, that was when you're talking about the pillars of Tech Impact, the organization that you're running now, people, innovation and investment, and growth. That's the second one. You have innovation and investment put together. Is that why? Because if you don't have that initial investment, if you don't have that fund money to go out and build something, it's not possible.
Yeah, I'm really worried about, are we going to lose kind of a generation of entrepreneurs right now because of investment, because of the fear of what COVID has done? You know, people are worried about employability. Businesses are worried about capital. They're conserving cash. And having that reliable access to capital at all stages of idea generation, whether you're a startup, whether you're scaling up, you need that cash to be able to grow. So while the members at Tech Impact are lots of strong, firmly cemented technology companies, we spend a lot of time thinking about how do we get more investment into the region to ensure we can have that next stable of entrepreneurs coming out of the programs that are happening at Propel or the colleges or the universities or the accelerators. So right now I'm worried a lot about cash and about investment. And do we have angels? Do we have public sector money that's going to continue to invest in the industry and these new idea generators? We need to keep a focus on entrepreneurship. And, you know, your session with Dorindra and Jeff talked a lot about that as part of the Turning Points series, and they were spot on in a lot of their assessments there.
And we talked a lot about how do you evaluate risk in the pandemic era, or at least in the pandemic moment. What do you think happens? What do you think personally? We've had a lot of opinions on this. What do you think happens? Do people batten down the hatches for a few years and become employees, or do people recognize opportunity and jump?
I think there are tremendous job opportunities in the region right now. So there's room for both, in my opinion. We are hearing that some startups are saying it's not the right time. I might go get a little bit of skills. I might try and work some more on my business idea and take that kind of job, Matt, so that I can be ready in 12 or 18 or 24 months' time. We've heard stories of entrepreneurs say, my idea had more relevance before than it does right now. So I think you're going to see an ebb and flow. I don't think there's a right or wrong. I'm worried that we're going to have fewer startups and entrepreneurs really be able to move as fast as they might have pre-COVID. But we have to stay focused on this is an important sector to invest in.
Yeah. And it makes me think of where is your cash coming from that you're reinvesting in the business? Because I've worked with a lot of organizations. I shouldn't say a lot, but I've worked with startups who are incredibly reliant on public money, grant writing every 6 months, having to sing for your supper all the time. And all of a sudden, when there is a situation like this, it may not be the case that public money has become less through the pandemic. And there are probably reasons that David and people like Richard Sion would know as to why, but you should be relying on people paying you for goods and services. No, And it makes me think that you should be able to, regardless of it's in a pandemic or if it's when the sun shines, you need to still carve out enough room for yourself to be able to satisfy these times. And you look at a place like a restaurant, something that's a service industry. I was reading in America, the average restaurant has 16 days of cash available should the restaurant shut down. And I could not believe that. Maybe that's naivete, or maybe the restaurant business is just a slog, but that can't be, can it? I mean, we have to get used to these kinds of things happening because of our relationship to the environment and how much it's changed.
One of the learnings of COVID-19 is just how little cash flow most small businesses have, right? I mean, I like you, thought that most small businesses could last 3, 4, 5, 6 months, not at full ramp. They might have to reduce staff or reduce costs, but this idea that you could literally go bankrupt or go run completely out of money in 2 or 3 weeks was a shock to me. So I think probably moving forward, banks and other investors are going to try to require a little more cash in the business, a little more flexibility in the business to be able to handle a downturn. And that's what they did with the banks after the 2008 recession, is that they made sure they had a much larger buffer to be able to handle the next financial meltdown. And we may have to think about the same things for our small business environment in Canada.
Matt, we did a survey with a national organization, ICTC, and we got about 40 respondents. And when we asked about what was happening for the tech companies that did respond, cash flow, cash management, sales and exports, being able to access the same markets that I did before, and then workforce were the top issues. So even we divided the research out into small and large IT firms, and cash flow was right up there for both of them. So I don't think we can underestimate that. So if they're concerned about cash, then they're not going to be investing as much into risky ideas. They need to pay. They need to pay their rent. They need to, you know, have services that are available. That's the fundamental. There's no doubt in my mind we've got a rough Q4 ahead of us and Q1 2021. Sales pipelines are lighter than they would normally be. And, you know, firms, not just the tech industry, are looking at how am I reaching my markets in new ways. I'm used to hopping on a plane and going to shows in different parts of North America or Asia or Europe. I mean, that's part of my sales and business development cycle, and that's not happening right now. So they're looking at new ways to do that. So I think there's a lot of angst, a lot of worry in the market right now about survivability and growth.
Yeah. I think so too. And staying on innovation, we'll bounce back to point one, because I think that's equally fascinating. But staying on point two, innovation and investment, just for a minute. I was at UNB listening to a really cool presentation from Dan Dwaron and Greg Fleet. And the discussion in the room, it was mostly academics and then people like me. And the discussion was, pivoting has become this buzzword in startup culture, that you should pivot and fail fast and things like this. We've all heard these things. But the discussion centered around how pivoting can be detrimental if you're always chasing that next shiny thing and you never quite know what you do. You see this sometimes. You ask somebody what they do and they never quite know, or sometimes it changes. And in the pandemic era, it strikes me that something like PPE, everybody and their uncle are now trying to produce hand sanitizer, but just because there's such a need for PPE doesn't mean that you should be making PPE. It just means that's what the market needs. So if you need to adapt in that way, fine. But I wonder if some people will lose themselves in this concern and this worry and just struggling to stay above water. It freaks me out, especially for the middle class that we've now seen doesn't have savings. My heart is still not fully back to where it was pre-pandemic. I'm still scared for people.
Yeah, look, I worked for a startup for 6 years and we pivoted probably 3 or 4 times and then settled on a model. And that company actually became a 70 person company that was sold to a company in LA a couple of years ago. So I think you do have to most of these tech firms start with a core technology or core idea, but it could be applied in many different ways. And they do have to figure out what the best potential way to do that. I think the COVID-19 reference is a good one, though, however, because we don't know how short-lived that will be or how long-lived that will be, right? If we're going to be facing periodic pandemics now every year or two for the next 20 years, people, you know, leaning into that space will do well. But if COVID-19 disappears and gets vaccinated out of existence, you know, we might be back to a situation where PPE and even technologies related to COVID-19 will disappear. So it's a tricky time, I think, to be thinking about how to invest in that space. Like even Zoom, you know, if COVID-19 goes away, Zoom will significantly see a reduction, I think, in its market cap.
But Zoom, and this is a good thing to ask Kathy about, Zoom is even a good example of the opposite, though. When you think about a professor I listen to a lot, Scott Galloway from the NYU Stern School of Business, he said that a crisis like this, it doesn't so much change the future as it accelerates the future, meaning the things that were coming in technology and the workforce and business may just come sooner as we double down on the changes. And maybe he's not totally right, but I see something like Zoom as, yeah, maybe their market cap is reduced post-COVID when we do return back to the office and we get to see each other again and work together again. But will we ever stop doing these podcasts via Squadcast if we can't be together? Will we ever stop having meetings via Zoom if we can't be together? No way.
No, I think there's no going back. I mean, I think it's brilliant looking at some of the examples. You know, family Zoom time that happened during quarantine. And I went over to my parents who, you know, wouldn't be really technically savvy, but they have their laptop and Facebook and all of that. And next thing you know, we're having a family Zoom and my parents are getting up and their camera working on their own. How beautiful is that? They're 78 and 84, by the way. So there's no going back, but I would also say, Matt, you're right. It has accelerated the dialogue about the importance of being able to pivot, to be able to do things digitally that honestly, as tech impact, would have taken us 10 years to have some of the dialogue that we're having. Do I think Digital Boost would have been launched? Yes. And this program that we've got going on right now, at the pace at which we work to get it going, no, probably would have taken longer, but businesses have been able to see because of the pandemic that if they don't change, they are going to not be able to operate in the world that we're in. So, you know, I certainly don't welcome the pandemic. What a horrible, horrific thing that's happened to us globally. But I do welcome the pace at which we are getting to things like digital transformation and looking at more innovative ways to work on problems that exist in some of our more traditional industries here in Atlantic Canada.
So tell us about Digital Boost in our final remaining minutes here, because it's a very interesting program that you've launched with the government. So tell us about Digital Boost.
Yeah, we started working on it in December, pre-COVID. And then when COVID hit, we really got excited about it. So it's about giving businesses here in New Brunswick a digital boost. There's two pieces of it. One, we want companies to buy local. I am not ashamed to say that. There are about 200 IT companies here in New Brunswick alone. And the program is a pilot for New Brunswick. So you need to be a private sector business, more than $2 million in revenue, and there's some other, you know, parameters like that, all on the Tech Impact website. So you apply to be a recipient of the fund. At the same time, we have tech companies applying to be the digital technology providers of these projects. And so right now, I have applications coming in from tech companies who want to do the project work and applications coming in from businesses who want to have their projects done. Project sizes can be $50,000 in size, of which our fund will pay 75%. So if a $50,000 project, we will reimburse you $37,500 for that work. And it's everything. It's cloud computing. It's cybersecurity. It's back office innovation. It could be e-commerce. It could be digital marketing. It could be machine learning, data analytics. There's a long list. And what I'm seeing from the applications that are coming in is there is a wealth of opportunity. And I'm very excited. $50,000 a project. We hope not everyone's projects will be that large, I expect. But I hope in this process we'll have between 25 and 35 businesses that we're able to help.
This is a dating platform for software.
Yeah,
you're matching the needs of the individual with the provider. What if, and I interrupted you, David, and I apologize for that. When you want to buy local, Kathy, when you're encouraging people to buy local solutions, this is going to sound provocative, but what if the solution isn't as good? And I'm not saying we don't build great solutions, but are we still trying to make sure this remains a local program? It's not just come and get funded to buy any solution. It's matching those regional providers with those
yeah,
who need
so
service.
Tech Impact's not doing any of the matching. Let me be very clear on that. But there will be a list of qualified technology providers. Matt, I think we have outstanding companies that can do this work. Mm-hmm. So I am not worried for 5 minutes about the quality of the technology providers that are going to be able to do this work for businesses. There's outstanding applications that are in. There's already 5 companies that have been approved. And hopefully by the end of this week, we'll have quite a longer list because I do have a review committee that's part of this, an independent review committee that's looking at all the applications. And we've got meetings over the next couple of days to review them all. I have no concern. I am concerned about the local IT companies and software companies and them having a sales pipeline. I am concerned that not enough of the New Brunswick and Atlantic Canadian businesses know the IT talent that we have and the firms that we have. If you're a business in Sussex, New Brunswick, or in Wolfville, Nova Scotia, and you need help with moving to the cloud, how do you find local talent? How do you find companies that can help you? We're learning that that's a bit of a challenge, and it's something we've got to work on. So I have zero concern about whether or not we can deliver the kind of quality work that's required to get this Digital Boost program going. I believe we're going to be wildly successful, and businesses are going to see that success. And absolutely, our largest financial partner in this program is ECOA, and the government of New Brunswick is our second financial partner, and I want nothing more than to be able to launch this in other parts of Atlantic Canada.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, Matt, that people don't realize it, but we actually have a pretty large trade deficit in IT services, defined as general IT services, but also data hosting and things like that. And that, you know, that a lot of that is, you know, the buying licenses to Microsoft software and things like that. So that's, you can't do anything about that. But when you look at the core IT services, I think there is absolute merit to doing what Kathy and her group are doing and saying, look, we've got this array of IT talent here that can do this work. Don't automatically assume you need to use some national or international firm. And this is a little inducement to use a local firm to get to a solution. And I think that that's a really, really viable thing to do, because obviously if you're running a big trade deficit in IT, that's not a particularly good thing. A place like Ontario runs a huge trade surplus in IT services, and New Brunswick a deficit. So we need to try and reduce that. And I think this program will help, at least in a small way, help us do that.
And we're accelerating conversations, Matt, that, some of these firms wouldn't have had some of these problems if COVID hadn't hit. And so when we worked with our partners, we really wanted to make this a program that people could say yes to. So 75% of a project, go back to thinking about that mindset of taking some risk, that risk reward. Is it worth it? We think that the kind of funding that we're providing is going to help accelerate some of these firms to invest. And I will tell you, tell both of you, we are getting a lot of interest from the manufacturing sector, which really excites me, because not only are they looking at kind of some of that core IT work, but we're also getting questions about automation and how to, you know, do more automation in those environments. So I hope it's just the jumping off point to get a broader discussion about the use of digital technology to help our economy. So there's lots of challenges with COVID. It's been an exciting 6 months in the tech industry for me and the work that we're trying to do to really talk about digital. And I can't wait to see what comes next.
Yes, indeed, Kathy. Where can an interested organization find out more about Digital Boost and Tech Impact?
techimpact.it/digitalboost is where you can find all the information about that. We will be launching our Tech Talk series all online in the fall. So we'll be promoting all of those. You can sign up to our newsletter so that you can get all of that content, but it's all going to be right there.
Perfect. Kathy, I'd love to have you back. There's two things in regards to the IT sector that I would love to hit on. I would love to talk about the realities of the gender gap and why those are present. And I know you do a lot of work on that. I also want to talk to it. I know David's eyes are going to be gleaming after this one. I think I underestimate the government's role in technology innovation, or at least spurring the innovation. David mentioned NASA and DARPA, and we don't have time to do that today, but I think I underestimate that. I think I'm way too private sector centric, and maybe I'm wrong, but we'll hear from David in the future on that.
Yeah, no, I'd be happy to come back. We didn't get to talk a lot about resources and the amount of graduates and the need for more immigrants. And so it's such a critical piece of that puzzle. There's no question about it. And of course, I will come back and talk about diversity in this sector any day that you want. It's something that I'm very passionate about.
And maybe, Kathy, someday we'll even talk about regional economic development in St. John. How's that?
That would be fun too.
Perfect. Okay, we have a date set for the future. David Campbell, stay safe, my friend. Kathy Simpson, thank you so much, and we'll see you all very soon.
Thanks very much. Bye.
Kathy Simpson, ladies and gentlemen, bye-bye. Growing Pains with David Campbell is produced by me, Matt George, is engineered by the great Zachary Pelche, and is part of the Unsettled Media Podcast Network.